Support for this News from Lake Wobegon podcast comes from home-baked Grand's Biscuits from Pillsbury, now also available in your grocer's freezer. Make as many as you need to warm up your morning. With a breakfast this grand, home is calling. And by the Sleep Number bed by Select Comfort, the bed that lets you adjust the mattress firmness to your preference, your Sleep Number.
Well, it's been a quiet week in Lake Wobegon, my hometown, out on the edge of the prairie. It's turned cold up there this last week. Cold and gray and kind of raw this last week, and sleet actually fell. It was the first time it really felt like winter. You could smell winter, that clean smell of winter, and you could smell those big breakfasts that we serve for winter, the eggs and the sausage and the hash browns. And you could smell the wood fires as well, and the leaves were falling. Even more leaves were coming down, and you could see over to the neighbor's house now. You could see them more clearly, and you can see them sitting in their kitchen eating breakfast together, and you can see that they don't get along with each other any better than you get along with people here in your house. So why are they carrying on airs like that? It was the freeze on Wednesday, and so all of the tomatoes and the peppers and everything that was left out in the garden is now gone beyond rescue. All those tomatoes that we meant to get, we're thinking we'd get a few more, but they're all out there and they're starting to rot. That was the tomato that I threw at my sister. When I was a child, one of the formative experiences in my life, it was in October. It was an enormous tomato. I guess we'd left it on the vine thinking it might just grow bigger, and it was almost the size of a volleyball. On a cold fall afternoon in Minnesota, in a gray sky and sleet, and there we were out in the garden. We were picking pumpkins. We had a big pumpkin patch, and we were supposed to take six of them, the six most perfect pumpkins, into the sixth grade classroom for the display, bless you. And I saw this enormous tomato, and it had fallen on the ground, and I lifted it up carefully. It was full of liquid, and it was many colors, yellows and scarlets and red and streaks of white. And then the streaks of white I saw were creatures who were swimming around inside, some kind of paramecia or some kind of larva, and they were swimming around very fast. They knew they were going to die, and they were moving around in there. I was fascinated to hold them in my hand. I was their god. I held them in the palm of my hand. They were amazing, dashing around in there. I put my cheek up against the skin of the tomato to give them a little bit of warmth, just so they could live a little bit longer, and I could feel them pressing against the skin. I could feel their little feet moving in there. My people in their tomato world. And then my sister, she yelled at me. She said, "Why are you always messing around and let other people do your work for you? Why can't you ever stick to a job?" She was practicing to be somebody's mother, but she didn't have to take me as a target. And I was not always messing around. I was exploring a science question here. Who was this race of organisms inside? I could imagine that they lived here. They loved their home. They had started schools. They had hospitals, medical care. They had a literature, they had a culture. Just in the space of a summer, they had made a whole universe inside there. And now their life was coming to the end. I was the guardian of this brave colony of larvae who were inside there. "Put that down," she said. "Just put that down, for Pete's sake." And I made a face that I knew irritated her. A look of idiocy came over my face. My face went blank, my eyes slightly crossed, and I opened my lips slightly and let some drool come down my chin. which really irks people who are related to you. They start to think about heredity, and I stood there. She looked away, disgusted. She went back to work finding a perfect pumpkin to take into the sixth grade class and win the favor of Miss Molenbrock. My sister was that teacher's favorite student. She was a favorite student of every teacher she ever had because she was perfect. And she did everything that she was supposed to do, and she was quiet, and she was obedient and polite. She, for Halloween, was going to be a queen, and I was going to be a bum, which is a fate that often falls to the middle child of a large family. The mother can only sew so many costumes, and so the middle child, the good child, the well-behaved, invisible child, accepts this as his lot, that he will put on a raggedy shirt and smoke up his face with a burnt cork and put his lunch into a little bandana and put it on the end of a stick and trudge from door to door trick-or-treating. She was going to be a queen with a gauzy cape and a crown and so forth. I stood there with my larva, my dying larva, in my little world. They were racing around, as you would too if you thought you only had a few hours. You know, if you were about to take off on a long journey, you didn't know where, and you'd think of all of these projects, last-minute projects, that you, if you didn't do them now, you'd never get around to them. And I sang them a hymn. I sang them a little song. I sang, "Abide with me. Fast falls the eventide. This world is rotten, Lord, with me abide. When other helpers fail and comforts flee, Lord of tomatoes, oh, abide with me." She stared at me, my sister. She said, "You are disgusting." Truer words were never spoken. That was the point of it. I stood there with drool coming out of my mouth and this blank look in my crossed eyes, and I was singing a hymn to a tomato. It doesn't get better than that. "Put that down," she said. "Put that down." Well, I was fascinated by it. I was fascinated by it. She bent over to pick pumpkins, but I could see she was glancing at me under her arms and back between her legs and so forth. And then she picked this beautiful pumpkin. She held it up. It was a perfect, perfect pumpkin. And then she heard me singing back behind her. I raised up my little tomato. And I sang, "Some bright morning when this life is o'er, we'll rot away. Little worms will come in to and fro, we'll rot away." I was just irritating the heck out of her. I was having a wonderful, wonderful time. I held it up like I was a priest. "O Lord, who didst create this tomato and these thy larvae, now take them to a place of joy and delight." "Oh, you are disgusting," she said. "Put that down. You're going to get that all over yourself." I said, "These are the same larvae that are crawling in and out of Grandma right now." "These larvae could be our grandmother." And I put my lips up to the tomato and I said, "Hi, Grandma." And she just snapped right there. She snapped. She picked up a big clod of dirt and she pegged it at me in the way that girls used to throw before girls could throw, and just went wild. But she felt so guilty because she was a good child, and she just sort of burst into tears. And she bent back down to go to work. And I threw the tomato at her. I could see her great rear like two great blue denim pumpkins there. It just seemed prophetic. It just seemed like fate somehow. And I thought, what a better end for these larvae, not to prolong their anguish, but you just go out in a big burst. I threw it, and I could see it spinning towards them. And then I took off running. I took off under the clothesline. Back before we had clothes dryers, we hung our clothes and sheets and so forth out on lines behind the house. And I dove under the wet sheets, and I could hear her behind me. She was just after me as fast as she could go. She was just furious. I crossed over the front yard and through the pile of leaves that my brother was raking, and I just tore through them, and I headed down McKinley Street where I knew all of the dogs were, the bad dogs. My sister was terrified of dogs. I could hear her feet behind her. I'm going to wring your neck, she said. Not a Christian thing to say, but she was coming after me. But no, none of those dogs, they must have all been eating supper or something, or sleeping. None of them were out there. I tore down the corner and around by the Chatterbox Cafe, and I headed down the block on Main Street, and she was right behind me. She said, I'm going to get you. And I saw my Uncle Jack Peterson, who was just on his way into the sidetrack tap to medicate himself. And I just dove into the open door right alongside him, and I scooched in past the bar. I'm just a little kid, 10 years old. I just dashed into the dark. Well, I knew that she was not going to come into the bar because she was a well-raised child. So I got to hide out in there. I peeked out the front door. She was waiting for me across the street. I just sat there in the sidetrack tap for a while, listening to men talk, listening to dirty talk, listening to cursing such as I'd never heard before, and the dirtiest jokes I'd ever heard. There was a young man from Antietam, and the limerick about the young sailor named Tex, and all of the rest. And I heard my Uncle Jack saying something I never heard a man say before. He said, "You know, when you feel bad, I could never say this to my wife, but when you feel bad, nothing helps like killing something." I just take my gun out and I go after a squirrel or anything, whatever is available. Blackbirds or deer, that's fine. Or just a worm on the sidewalk. Just kill something. Kill a rat, kill a mouse or something. Just always lifts me up in some way. I sat there in the dark listening to all of this going on. I heard two men walk back into the men's can and throw up in the way that you would just blow your nose and then come back and have another drink of whiskey. I sat there for a long time, hiding in the dim light in the corner. Nobody noticed me. And then I opened the back door, and I looked down the alley both ways. Nobody seemed to be there, but I was sure she would be there. But I stepped out into the alley, and I headed for home. I walked slowly, looking back over my shoulder. The sun had gone down. It was dark. I walked up Green Street, and there was my house, and I walked around back, and there was my family in the dining room. They were eating supper. They were all there. They were eating meatloaf and mashed potatoes and stewed tomatoes, and there was one chair vacant. They didn't seem to be missing me or worried at all. And I thought of that song, "We shall meet, but we shall miss him. There will be one vacant chair. We will linger to caress him as we breathe our evening prayer." And imagined that I was dead. And I'd come back to earth to see my family. And they didn't miss me that much, because I was a middle child. I was dispensable. There was my sister, my brothers, my younger sister, my mother, my father. I sat looking in the window, thinking about my own death. And then my dog, Cappadocia, barked about 5 feet away, a sudden, loud bark. And in the moment that he barked, my bowels opened up. Never happened to me since. It just opened up. I had to take up off my pants and bury them in the garden and wash myself off with cold water from a hose. And I had to sneak in the front door and tiptoe up to my room and put on my trousers and then come down to dinner and sit in the vacant chair. My mother looked up in surprise. And it was surprise that she had just noticed that I wasn't there. "Where were you?" she said. "You smell of smoke and beer." I said, "I'll tell you in just a moment." And I bowed my head as if I were praying over my food. And I prayed a long prayer, actually trying to think of a good story. And then I opened my eyes and I said, I went into the sidetrack tap with Uncle Jack. I was witnessing to him about the Lord. And he went in to try to get away from me, and I just went right in there with him. "Oh, bless your heart," my mother said. "Bless your heart. I hope he listened to what you had to say." My dad snorted. He couldn't imagine Uncle Jack ever coming to the Lord. It'd be like having a warm winter or something. It'd just go against the laws of nature. My sister looked at me, and I saw her lips form the word liar. Liar, liar, pants on fire. I looked at her. I said, "You smell of tomato. What happened to you?" And then I made my eyes go blank. I opened my mouth. A little drool came out. "You will pay for this someday," she said. "You will pay. You will be sorry for this someday." I suppose she was right. I'm still waiting. Still waiting. That's the news from Lake Wobegon, where all the women are strong, all the men are good looking, all the children are above average.
Support for this News from Lake Wobegon podcast comes from Home-Baked Grand's Biscuits from Pillsbury, now also available in your grocer's freezer. Make as many as you need to warm up your morning. With a breakfast this grand, home is calling.